Episode 86.
Without help in the business implementing, you go back to whenever you're under stress, you go back to what you know. You go back to your old habits. And what happens is you come home with a great idea. You tell your techs, hey, we're going to do this and we're going to check cars. And here's an inspection sheet and you're going to inspect cars. And 2 weeks later, nobody's inspecting cars, but there's no management around it. Because you're putting the fires out.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to On Point from Remarkable Results Radio, and a special interview from an auto care industry professional. On Point. Welcome, aftermarketers. Carm Capriotto here with episode 86, brought to you by Federal Mogul Motor Parts. Search for parts, get the latest technical updates, and sign up for their new Garage Rewards loyalty program at their all-new website, fmmotorparts.com. Hey, a big thanks for being involved in the podcast and slicing off your share of wisdom that is liberally shared by our guests each week. And now a very interesting episode with Cecil Bullard, president of the Institute for Automotive Business Excellence. Listen to this industry thought leader who loves to share his thoughts and lessons on the success of the service professional. So why listen? You'll hear Cecil talk about six KPI, key performance indicators, every profitable shop must manage each day. Find out why the typical shop owner does not know what he needs to know to improve his net income to 20%. Why implementing is one of the biggest challenges to improving any business, and how to create the money to grow the bottom line so every owner can work on their business and not in it, and so much more. A jam-packed episode where you are guaranteed to learn just one thing. Now, here we go. Hey, it's great to be with Cecil Bullard, president of the Institute for Automotive Business Excellence. Cecil, are you ready to go On Point?
You betcha. I'm raring to go.
All right. Hey, let's jump right in. So what's holding back shop owners from aggressive plans to grow their business?
Industry has changed dramatically in the last, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, and it's changing more dramatically in the future.
Uh-huh.
The other piece of the pie, so the vehicles are changing, technology is changing, the business is changing. The other problem we have here is that we have a lack of qualified technicians in the business,
mm-hmm.
and they're leaving the business in droves. There was an article out the other day that said 56% of the shop owners want to sell their business, and the number one reason is they're not making the profits that they need to make. When you think of a technician today, when I joined the industry 35 years ago, I went down to Sears. I spent $300 on tools. My dad had a shop. I went to work for him. But over the next 10 years, I probably spent more than $5,000 a year on tools. And at the time, what are you making? So if you wanted to be a tech today and you're going to spend $5,000 to $10,000 on tools every year, it's going to take you 3 or 4 years to ramp up to where you really are as knowledgeable as you need to be. You're not going to make $50,000. Most of the shops don't have medical, dental, no 401k. Why would you go into the automotive industry and be a tech when you can be a computer tech and make $110,000 and you don't have the other expenses and you're seen as a professional?
So a big investment of tools, a big investment of training, and the pay is not commensurate with that.
No, and in fact, if you look at shop owners, they're just not making the money that they should make. I did a calculator. We talked about this the other day, that from 1980, if you were making $70 an hour to today, if you increased your labor rate by 3% every year, that's the cost of inflation.
Mm-hmm.
Today, you'd be charging a little over $200 an hour as a shop. And I don't know any shops that are charging $200 an hour. In fact, the typical shop is somewhere around 100, 110 in the United States, depending on where you are.
Okay, so you work with shop owners and you sit down with them, you create plans, you really look inside their business, you normalize their profit and loss statement, and you get them to drink your Kool-Aid. They've got to be able to believe. And so let's cut to the chase. If those shops that follow a plan from a business consultant, coach, trainer, have they been able to pay techs more, keep them more engaged, bring better benefits?
In every shop that I have done business with over the past 9 years, when we've left, the technicians are making considerably more money, 20 to 30% more than they are today. When we build pay plans, we build what we call performance-based pay plans. Most of those pay plans have a base salary, and then we build a performance. And when you understand your business, Once you've paid your fixed expenses in the business, you start to make more profit on the next dollar. When you build a pay plan for a technician, typically we would spend about 20% of our dollar coming in. So parts and labor dollar, our gross sales on a technician, and or 40% of our labor rate.
Okay.
And that would be all in, loaded, FICA, FUTA, workers' comp, whatever I got to pay for this guy.
All right.
When you build that pay plan, if the guy's doing the job and he's doing 40 hours a week, you're going to have a pay plan that's very successful. When your business overcomes your fixed expenses, you're going to keep another 25 to 30% of those dollars coming in. So when you build a pay plan, you build it correctly. When you hit that target, you can actually pay the technician more money. So when you build performance-based pay plans with a base pay and then a substantial bonus after these points in time, you can actually afford to pay the technician more money, and you will make more money in your business when you understand that.
Is the driving force behind that the effective labor rate?
That's part of it. That's a piece of the pie. Productivity is probably the largest driving force. And then the second piece of that pie is probably margin. So I need parts margin. Typical parts margin that we ask our clients to get is about 58%. Our probably clients probably average about 55%.
All right.
Labor margins, I'm looking for 64%, and I'm looking for an overall gross margin of about 62% with labor cost above the line and parts cost above the line. When I get that, and I understand my business, 25% of my dollars are going to go to my fixed expenses, 6 to 9% to marketing, 10% to sales cost, and then I'm going to have a 20% bottom line. That's the target, and that's what you're trying to do. So when you start talking about, you know, how am I making money, you have to understand that there's about six things that are really important. One of those is productivity. It's a hugely important number, and car count matters, and average repair order matters. A higher average repair order is going to give you better productivity. There's wasted time in every job that we do where we can't charge the customer the paperwork, the test drive, etc.
I believe you would agree that being a top tech is hard work. Keeping up is a full-time gig, considering vehicle technology, repair procedures, and diagnostics. It's refreshing to know that Federal Mogul Motor Parts' Garage Guru is there for you. It's been designed by and for technicians, the best in the industry. And did you know there's no other comprehensive program like this anywhere? A big part of the program is the nationwide network of Guru's on-site training and technology centers, and there, you get your hands dirty with the equipment and tools you use every day in real work-related situations. And if these great training programs aren't enough, you've got the Guru's On Demand app for quick, accurate assistance and information. And when the phone is just perfect, there's the ASE-certified bilingual Guru's On Call there to help. And this year, you get free stuff from the Garage Rewards loyalty program. You earn points towards gear from your favorite Federal Mogul Motor Parts' brand. And what is really great, it costs nothing to join, and you'll start earning points immediately. Head on over to fmgarageGurus.com and learn all about Garage Guru's training, support, and get in on the rewards. So anyone who's listening that's not making a 20% net I don't want to be detrimental or terminal here, but the future's not bright.
As things get more complicated, and if you look at the last 10, 15 years, the vehicle's gotten more complicated, the education that the tech needs, and everything hasn't come along with that as shops. The typical shop's making 3% net profit, and that's a number that's been true. And I would tell you that number's true today because when I go into a shop as a consultant at the beginning, most of the shops are making at the most 5 or 6%. And that's not a safe company. That's not a company that has 3 months of operating capital in the bank. And so how am I going to hire and train my own technicians? Because nobody else is training these guys. These kids that are coming out of these tech schools, they have a good education. They understand electricity and they understand the computer system, but they don't know how to fix the car. They don't have enough hands-on, and they certainly don't understand how the business works. So if I'm going to train these guys, I need a training program. How am I going to pay for that? How am I going to attract these kids? Or these young people, 38 years, 32, 35, I can say young now because I'm an old man, but how am I going to attract those into the business and get them to a level where they can be productive and make money for my business if I don't have the money to do that.
You bring up a good point. Where are those future techs going to come from? If I can afford them, where are they going to come from?
Well, I think we're going to have to grow many of them. I think if we bring pay up for technicians, you know, let's say that we could offer a technician $100,000, $110,000 in pay. I ran a shop in Mountain View, California several years ago, and my technicians made between $80,000 and about $120,000. It's a wealthy area. We had a high labor rate, you know, all of those kind of things. So you got to take that into account.
Yeah, but think of the relativity, and you bring up a good point. If a tech's making 35 to 40 now and you could pay him 55 to 60, what a huge boost maybe not in an affluent area, but that's still a keeper. It's a keeper wage.
Now I can attract a kid who has what I need, the intelligence, the drive, et cetera.
Yeah.
But then I've got to train him. I need 2 years to really train this guy about how to work on a car and how to do the thing right. And somebody's got to be with him and teach him what to do.
I guess your point's so well taken. If you had a 20% bottom line, you could afford to bring on a C and grow him to a B and an A within your own company because you've got the money to fund that level of training and the tools that are necessary to pull it off.
Yeah, with money, you can do a lot of things.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't do everything, and money doesn't solve all problems. But if I have the money to attract an intelligent person, and if I have the money to raise that person over a two-year period, and if I have the money to actually take the time to put that program together, and if I have the money to take the time to go out and actually work with some of the training companies to find the best and the brightest, now I have the ability to bring somebody in and really grow them into the technician I want them to be. And if I'm paying them well, they're not going anywhere else. I've created loyalty if I have a business that runs well.
What's the biggest hurdles for a typical shop owner to overcome to be better and profitable? What does it take a person who needs that redo, what's it take for them to get there?
I think typical shop owner doesn't understand what they need to know. A typical shop owner, you know how to fix cars. You work hard in the business. You think if you work hard that hopefully at the end of the week there's going to be profit. I don't think they understand that they can create that. Your business, you have absolute and complete control. You don't have to take in customers at a discount. You don't have to run $24 oil changes. You can build a very successful business if you know the right things to do. And there's another problem, and that is you go to a class. You come to one of my classes at Vision or ATE or wherever I'm speaking, and you get all these great ideas, and then you go back to your shop. How do you get it implemented?
Yeah.
Without help in the business implementing, you go back to whenever you're under stress, you go back to what you know. You go back to your old habits. And what happens is you come home with a great idea. You tell your techs, hey, we're going to do this, and we're going to check cars. And here's an inspection sheet, and you're going to inspect cars. And 2 weeks later, nobody's inspecting cars, but there's no management around it. Because you're putting the fires out that you feel like you need to put out.
Okay, I go to your class. I'm enthralled at the things that I have to do. I come back to my shop, and now I have to be a doer. I have to participate in doing.
Yes.
What's your secret to get me to do that?
Well, I think you need someone that's, number one, going to build a business plan for you so you understand not just the short term, what do I have to do, but the long term, what does this look like?
A business plan.
Yeah, I think you need to understand that wherever you can, you're putting these processes in place, and processes are, once you have a process, now I can teach people, I can track it, I can monitor it, I can make sure it happens.
I get it. So I come back, I really do a deep dive in how my business runs and in my processes, and so I get so darn engaged in an improvement routine.
It's kind of both. When you fully understand your business, you can see what the potential really is. And I think most guys at this point, the business kind of running them, and they don't understand that this business is worth $300,000 a year, $250,000 a year to me, plus a salary for running the business as the manager. Most of the guys are working in the business so much, putting the fires out, dealing with the day-to-day crap, that they're not working on the business.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you have a business plan and you have someone that knows what to do, a consultant, myself, there's several other good consultants in the industry. It costs money, but if it made you an extra $100,000 a year, an extra $150,000 a year for the rest of your life, what is that worth to you?
Here's great news. There's a new brake pad on the market that can stop a pickup SUV or CUV up to 50 feet sooner than other leading pads. And on top of that, it lasts up to twice as long as previous designs. Sound too good to be true? Well, Wagner Brake did it. They designed their new Wagner OEX brake pads that stopped up to 50 feet sooner than other leading brake pads. To prove it, they got Link Engineering, pretty much the industry standard on brake performance testing, and they got their proof. But Wagner needed more convincing. They asked 400 top technicians to put Wagner OEX pads to the test, where it matters most, in their shops and on their customers' vehicles. 99% said they saw a noticeable difference in the new brakes, and 95% said they'd likely recommend them to other service professionals for their customers. Now, soon you can get Wagner OEX brake pads in your shop. They'll be available nationwide with coverage for 95% of U.S. pickups, SUVs, and CUVs. Get the full story. Learn about the science behind Wagner OEX and check coverage. Go to WagnerBrake.com. So I've heard this statement before. Why would I hire a consultant to tell me what I already know is wrong with my business?
And my answer to that is, why aren't you already doing the right things if you already know what's wrong? You haven't fixed it yet. And what makes you think that tomorrow you're going to fix it? I used to be a sales manager, national, and I used to have these kids come in my office and I'd say, okay, what are you going to sell next month? And they'd say, I'm going to sell 20 units. And I would say, okay, last month you sold one. What are you going to do different this month that you didn't do last month that's going to make you sell 20 units? Because that's the key. If you're going to do the same thing, we call that insanity. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go back to my business. I'm going to do exactly the same thing I did last week. You're going to get the same result. And in fact, your business is actually going to go downhill because there's more pressure from outside. There's more competition. There's more of everything today. It's more complicated.
Have you ever seen someone walk away from a free $100 seminar, go to their business, and actually pull it off without taking that next step?
I can't say that I have. There's probably one or two guys that did it. And there's guys that join my program and they're very proactive and they get a lot of results very quickly. And there's other guys that takes 2 or 3 years and they don't get those results as quickly. It takes more time. It depends on you and what you're willing to do. But what I see is year after year, I see the same guys come into class and they take something and they go home and they get some little positive, you know, result.
A tweak.
Yeah, and it makes a little difference in their business. And so they come back the next year for the other little piece. And what I say is, okay, so you got 1% or you got 2%. Why not get 10%? And so I'm going to do this over the course of 5 years, and I may get up to 12% net. Why not in the first year get up to 15% and then in the second year get up to 20%?
Oh, okay. I'm a businessman, and I'm working in my business, not on it. I go to your program. How hard is it for me, or does the business have the right profit structure for me to become the work on, not work in? Isn't that the biggest transition?
I don't think it's the money, because the money can be created in most cases. Most businesses, you come in and they got a 32 to a 40% parts margin. You put another 10 points into the parts margin and they've got $100,000.
Done.
And now I can hire a manager, or I could hire another service advisor. I can, you know, but also when I hire somebody, I've got to train them. I can't just hire somebody and say, here you go. I got to work on the business. And so the hardest transition is, when I was a tech, I was a good tech. And then I became a service advisor. And one of the things I had to realize is that as a service advisor, I'm not a tech. I'm a service advisor. I have to focus on sales. I have to focus on relationships. I don't need a relationship with a car. The car's a machine. I can get in there and determine what's wrong, put a new piece in, and say, now, people are different. When you become an owner, it's a different role. A manager or a leader in the business, that's a different role than a technician or a different role than a salesperson.
Right.
And yeah, there's some sales skills, selling your people on the ideas and getting them involved and getting them excited about the future, but it's not the same. And if you're focused on the same things you were as a service advisor at a tech, you're never going to get what you should or could out of your business.
So, okay, we agree here that there's too many shop owners working for too little return. What kind of management training does it take to get these guys to do a 20-plus net operating?
It's a combination of things. I think you need somebody on your tail I think you need education so you understand what you need. A business plan to me is essential. If you don't have a good comprehensive business plan, you're going to waste a lot of time and energy.
Now, let's wait 1 second. Business plans, I've seen them, 20 pages, 150 pages. What should someone consider they would need to have to figure out where their business is going? You know, is it a strategic plan as much as a business plan?
It's more of a strategic plan than a typical business plan. I mean, I can go to the bank and we use them at the bank to get money, but that's not what it's for. It's taking a look at your business where you are today. I'm going to take a trip. I'm in Utah today. I'm going to go see you. I got to get a map out. I got to plan out the roads. I got to know where I'm starting. I got to know where I'm ending.
Right.
I got to know what I'm going to do if the road's closed somewhere. What's the detour? I got to have a Siri. It's going to help me around those roadblocks. Mm-hmm. If I don't have that, the odds of me getting to you at the right time, getting to you without wasting a bunch of time and money, get diminished. And so a business plan, my business plans are about 100 pages. They're very comprehensive, and we do a lot of projections. We create a real business that is your business but working properly. They're unique to everybody because your business is unique.
Do you do it for me or do I do it with you?
It's a little of both. It's an educational process where we sit down and we go over numbers and we talk about your business and your processes. Most of the processes are organic. And organic processes reach a thing called equilibrium. Equilibrium is usually far below where I could perform if I'm managing that. Equilibrium is the employee doing the least amount to not get yelled at and the manager doing just enough to not yell at the employee.
Got it. Does the business plan actually, you mentioned maps before, which was a great analogy. Is that the map that allows me to be the doer?
It has to be. You have to look at your business and say, what do I got to do first? And most guys don't even know that. If you put a comprehensive performance pay plan in place with a base salary and a good performance bonus, but you don't have the capacity because you don't have the right process for the technician to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't get cars at 8 o'clock. They don't have enough cars. The estimating that takes too long. We're not selling enough. The inspection process isn't good. At the end of the day, the tech's still not going to be productive. You got to fix those things first so that now I can put a pay plan in place where the tech can be successful. Because if you put a carrot out there that they can't get, all you do is demotivate people and you're in worse shape than you were. And so you need to know what to do first, second, and third. And a good comprehensive business plan is a map. It says, you know, we're going to take this road first. And when we get to the end of that road, we're going to make a left or right. We're going to go forward. We're going to go backward. What are we going to do? It's the same thing.
Great nuggets on profitability and sustainability. Thanks for that. We were talking the other day, and you were pretty passionate about government, autonomous cars, restrictions on licensing. Let's just shoot the breeze for a few minutes on that.
I've got some shop owners that are very nervous about the future of the automotive industry, that there may not be the ability for us to work on cars. For years and years, I've thought we need certification and licensing, and that's an argument that I kind of gave up fighting because there's too many people in the industry that are afraid that if we had it, they wouldn't qualify. I think that's the problem. And what's going to happen is the car becomes more sophisticated. These cars are parking themselves. They're braking themselves. They're going to be driving themselves at some point. And the first time some technician from an independent works on one of those cars and somebody crashes it and gets killed because they didn't do their job right, the government's going to step in and go, sorry. And right now, if you look at the articles and you go online and you start looking at information, that's already happening.
Mm-hmm.
There was I can't even remember what it was. Yesterday, I got this thing, and it was basically there's these two laws that they're trying to pass, and it's really the government saying, we don't believe you're going to be qualified to work on the car. Now, I don't think that's going to be true because I don't think the dealers can take care of the cars even in the future. But we need to become a more professionalized organization so that we can, when the time comes, we can say we're qualified to do this job. The future is if we let it happen to us, it's going to happen how they want it. If we create it, it's going to happen how we want it.
I look at our associations and the leaders that we have out there. I think there's going to be an awful lot of integration into the government process from our leaders. I know the dialogue is hot and it's heavy and it's ongoing. I plan on having a few face-to-face sessions on licensing, and I hope within the next 30 days of our interview here so that we can keep a dialogue going and at least get the aftermarket to be sensitized at a higher level than I think they may be now?
I think you need to. I'm going to say something that I hope you don't edit out. We don't have our associations. The biggest association is ASA. By their records and their accounts, they may have 2,400 or 2,500 members. We have 230,000 automotive shops with owners, service advisors, and techs, an average of about 8 people in each of those. They have less than 3,000 members for the association. How can they be a powerful group when they have less than 3,000 members with a business that has an industry that has 230,000 shops involved in it? There's so small a percentage. And then you look at statistical data on consulting and coaching. And I don't know that there is any accurate statistical data, but I would tell you that probably only 25% of the industry participates in education, training, et cetera. Maybe 50. But what happens to the other 50% if they don't support the associations, create leaders?
You make such a great point. When we do interview association members and they talk about the value that they get from it, these are really the top shop operators. I mean, they're the people that are really, really doing well. And I think there's either a level of apathy, or maybe because of government intervention, because of the need for techs, you know, from growing our own in the STEM programs in school and being having to go to the colleges and meet guidance counselors and being so involved with the government, that everyone may say, I got to pony up my dues. There's never been a more important time.
If you think about lawyers, doctors, et cetera, and we're on par with them, our education to do what we do is every bit as hard or as difficult or as time consuming as a master's degree in a college, if you really do what you need to do. And you got to pay for education. And I don't think we're willing to really pay for that education, at least not. Some guys are, but it's a small percentage because they're not making money. You go into the shop, the guy doesn't have any time. He's working 12, 13 hours a day. That was my dad. And he's making $50,000 a year. And he gets a truck and he gets some other benefits. And every once in a while, he pulls $100 out of his shop. But he's not making the living that he should. And now you're asking this guy to spend money on an association and time investment, because there is some time investment, go to training, send his people to training. Mm-hmm. I don't think the average shop owner really understands the value of all of that. The guys that my top clients are popping 24 to 26% out their bottom line, and these are guys that are focused. They understand the business. They're not working in the business. They're working on the business. They have people doing their jobs. But a typical shop owner is making 3%. He's stressed. The business is running him. He's working 12, 13 hours a day. But you can't get here from there unless you pay your dues. And that means you've got to get involved and you need this training. We have one of the largest training things, Vision, in Kansas City coming up in, I think it's March.
Yep.
And they will be full. But there'll be 2,000 people there.
3,500.
Out of 500,000. It's the best educators in the industry going to be there, and it's cheap.
I'm absolutely with you, and it begs me to ask the next question about consolidation. And for years, the really top shop operators just look at a fella down the road and say, you know, he sets his labor rate by mine. He's always discounting. He's giving a black eye occasionally because he's the one that's caught by the damn reporters that, you know, car rip off. Yeah. With the challenges that are going to exist, just draw the line in the sand today and say it's going to be so much more complicated, so much more government intervention, so much more high tech. Where do you see the consolidation piece? Let me rephrase that. Are the best operators going to expand by multiple shops and continue a great legacy of profitability, or are the other in there? Are they going to buy these middle range shops? Where do you see this all fluxing?
I think there are top operators right now that already have 30 shops and they're expanding to 60 or 70 because there's deals out there. You know, the guy that's out there working for 3%. End of the day, what's his shop worth? $100,000, $150,000.
He worked all them years for that,
and he's going to sell it. And literally, if you had a business that was making you $250,000 plus a salary, that business is worth $1 million, $1.5 million yeah. instead of $150,000. So
yeah.
I'm going to go in and buy your shop. You're not running it right. Your labor rate's not right. You're not selling correctly. You're not, your margins aren't good.
Yeah.
Your productivity's bad. And I'm going to fix it because I know how to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, I'm going to be making $250,000 a year. This is what's happening right now. And consolidation is a natural thing. It hasn't really happened in our industry. And then the other thing is, there's always going to be another Philly Bob to open up a shop down the street that doesn't know what he's doing. Who's, because there's no entry cost into the – there's a very low entry cost into the automotive. We registered the governor's dog in California as a shop owner. $300 and you can be a shop owner in California. Or at least it was back then. It's probably $6 now, but it's under $1,000.
What are you guys trying to prove a point?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there has to be something that says, can this person do the job? Does this person know what they're doing? And even if that's some kind of an education program, I mean, Europe, Canada, they have programs, they have mentorship programs, they have training programs. You can't just walk in and go, I'm going to be a shop owner.
Is a start this technician licensing issue?
You know, we've been fighting that battle for 35 years. We haven't gone where I think we need to go. That's me. And my opinion is we need to be licensed and we need to be the ones developing that. And we need to be the ones saying, this is what that looks like. And we need to grandfather people in and bring them along so that they can qualify.
Mm-hmm.
But, we're in trouble if we don't fix it. We're in trouble and there will be consolidation. And these guys that are not getting education, not learning what to do, they will not be in business. They just won't be able to.
The time has flown by. I think you and I could go on for an absolute hour and really nail some good stuff. Would you ever come back someday?
Any day you want me to come back, I'm willing to.
Thanks, man. Hey, any Cecil Bullard great words to live by that you get up every day and think about?
I'm in charge. I get to determine what happens to me. And I can, if somebody else can do it, I can do it.
Cecil Bullard, president of the Institute for Automotive Business Excellence. Thanks a mil for being with me.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from another inspiring aftermarket professional. Until next time.